and made sure it curled. In many ways, it was a perfect costume while not being a costume at all. And it was obviously intentional, directed at her. Stevie's legs decided to debone themselves, and her body became a hormonal swamp. She clutched her pillow belly for emotional support.
"What are you?"
he said to Stevie.
"A chef?"
"She's Hercule Poirot," Janelle said, as if it was obvious that the baggy suit and fake mustache also translated. "And Wonder Woman and Gandalf and Sherlock all together, just like nature intended. Should we go?" The four of them headed out into the night. They were met on the path by Vi, who was dressed as a perfect Steve Trevor.
"So,"
David said as the five of them passed under the dark trees to the great house.
"Is this weird?"
"Which part?" Stevie said.
"Is there fanfic of this? You know, these two.
What does that look like? What do we call it?
Porlock? Sherio?"
Janelle and Vi were arm in arm, Wonder Woman and Steve. Nate was off by himself, his cape brushing the lawn.
"Where did you get the coat?"
Stevie said, trying to sound casual.
"What, this old thing?"
he said, extending his hands in the pockets and showing it off.
"I just charged a $2,000 coat to my dad's credit card."
"There are $2,000 coats?" Stevie replied.
"He'd want me to have it. I can't look shabby, can I? Not at the White House."
This was the first time David had ever said anything about his father's ambitions. And Stevie glanced around nervously.
"They didn't hear,"
he said,
"and wouldn't understand if they did."
They walked in silence for a moment. The world was spinning gently as she comprehended what was going on. He was doing the sexy dress for her, not the other way around. He was trying so hard, reaching for her. "No chance you know about any tunnels under Minerva?" she asked, trying to regain some composure.
"There are no tunnels under Minerva."
"Not according to Fenton."
"What is a Fenton?"
"Fenton is the professor I work for in Burlington, the one writing a book about the case."
"There are no tunnels under Minerva," he repeated. "You think I wouldn't notice a tunnel under Minerva?"
"Secret tunnel," she said.
"I repeat."
She seems pretty sure.
"Well, I'm pretty sure, too. You haven't said if you like my coat."
"I like your coat." She meant it to come out dry and unaffected, but instead her bastard throat betrayed her with a tiny croaking sound on the last syllable. The body was the enemy of the mind. Ellingham had gone all out for the Halloween party. The great house was made for occasions such as this, quite literally. All the overhead lights had been turned off, and illumination came in the form of hundreds of tiny, flickering electric candles. They were on every surface and lined the staircase. The diffused light winked off the crystal. A fire roared in the big fireplace where a s'mores station had been set up, manned by Kaz, who was dressed as David Bowie with a lightning bolt across his face. Call Me Charles approached, dressed as Charlie Chaplin.
"You guys ready for some fun?"
he asked.
"No,"
David said. Charles let this slide and pointed toward the door of the ballroom with his costume cane. This was not a silent party tonight. The ballroom, with its mirrored walls and its carnival mask decorations, flickered with light and was rich with sound. There were orange and white fairy lights draped from the ceiling, and hundreds more tiny electric candles flicking along the walls and floor. A table was set up with drinks and snacks. A few regular suspects were in the middle of the floor, dancing away, including Maris, who was wearing a red flapper outfit, a choice that felt inevitable to Stevie. Dash was there as well, dressed as Han Solo. Vi extended a gallant hand to Janelle, who took it. Wonder Woman and Steve began to dance.
"Hey."
Mudge was standing next to them, dressed as Mickey Mouse. A 6'5" Mickey Mouse, with big ears coming off his jet black hair.
"Cool Gandalf,"
he said to Nate. He looked a bit more confused by Stevie and David, but nodded politely.
"I'm a watch ad,"
David said.
"She's a hipster grandpa. Together, we solve crime."
Mudge cocked his head at this and decided his time might be better spent elsewhere. Nate also looked around the room from under the massive brim of his wizard hat and immediately decided that he was going to the s'mores station. Stevie and David were left standing on the side.
"You want to dance, Grandpa?"
he asked Stevie.
Hercule.
You want to dance, Hercule?
Hercule was feeling nervous. The fine cloth of David's shirt was soft and fitting. She could sense what it would be like to put her hands against his chest, to work them around to his back, to press against his body.
Maybe a s'more, she said.
He gestured for her to lead the way. They stepped back into the main hall, where the less dance-inclined of the Ellingham student body were playing some games. There was another table of snacks out here, and David walked over to it and grabbed a few sticky balls of pretzel and marshmallow.
A tunnel, he said, taking a bite. Ardno.
This was safer, steadier ground.
You don't know everything about the tunnels.
I would know if it was in the floor of the building I live in.
He sat down in a crepuscular spot under the shadow of the grand stairs. A person dressed as a skeleton bopped by. If they wanted to have a real Halloween party, they'd let us into the basement, she said.
It's nuts down there. It's like a maze. Now you interest me, David said, straightening. How does one get to this basement?
No, she said. I promised Larry.
A promise is only...
I promised Larry, she said, casting her eye in the direction of the doorway to the kitchen.
Well, this is fun. Sitting on a bench.
Then go dance or something, Stevie said.
You don't want to dance.
You don't need my permission, she said.
But maybe I'd rather stay with you, he said.
David stretched out his legs a bit and tapped gently at the inside of her ankle with the toe of his shoe. He turned his eyes up to her. What was this? Flirting? Flirting was sending an unexpected text message. This was something else. Something that made her feel like she did when Ellie gave her that warm champagne to drink on the first day. Bubbles in the bloodstream. An air of unreality. No, this was more than that. This was like she'd gone through a stargate into the life of some parallel universe, Stevie. She was used to feelings that butted up against each other. The way that anxiety brought bad excitement. She could handle that now because she knew that feeling. This was something like good nausea, which made no sense, and therefore she was back to anxiety and its bad excitement, except there was a new chemical level. And in this case, because everything stunk of Edward King, no good move to make. There were no answers here, except to avoid, avoid, avoid. She tried to look away from his tapping foot and concentrated on the stairs sweeping above them. And the door to the kitchen underneath. The door to the kitchen under the stairs. A lot happened under staircases in old houses. Under the stairs, that's where the servants worked. Harry Potter lived under the stairs. Even Albert Ellingham had written about something being under the stairs. Where do you look for someone who's never really there? Always on a staircase. But never on a stair, she said out loud.
Come again?
Stevie was already on her feet, and David followed. As they passed the door, Call Me Charlie Chaplin regarded them with confusion.
Going so soon?
He said. I forgot something, Stevie replied. My medication. Have to take it. Be right back. Charlie Chaplin tipped his bowler hat. Stevie and David, or Hercule and Sherlock, walked double time down the path and under the trees, quickly enough that Stevie worked up a cold sweat.
So what's happening now?
He said. Under the stairs, she said. Did you ever look under the stairs in Minerva?
Meaning what?
The stairs are enclosed, but there has to be space under there. It's the only place you can't see and wouldn't be likely to look.
Under the stairs, he repeated. What made you think of that?
I just did, she said. As they hurried, she noted that they were passing by one of the cameras, the dark glass and the little blue pinpoint of light recording their movements. Maybe Edward King watched these. Maybe he saw this now, Stevie and David together. He would approve. Here Stevie was, doing his bidding. She wasn't even in control of it anymore. Inside of her jacket pocket, she gave the camera the finger. Back in Minerva, she and David went right to the stairs, those creaky beasts that would always remind her of Hayes on that first day when he got her to carry his stuff. On that day, the light poured in through the stained glass. She walked behind him, staring at his muscular calves covered in light-colored hair as she hauled a box. He was talking about Hollywood and his show.
That was only about 2 months in the past. Now his death was a memory. Tonight, the hall was dark. There were lights, but they did little to illuminate the end of the hall. Maybe this was intentional, she thought. Keep the attention off the stairs, make details harder to see. The stairs were a tight coil, and underneath was a curved bit of wood that met up with the wall. She felt the wood, running her hands up and down to feel for any openings. David knocked on it.
Sounds kind of hollow, he said. I guess I never thought to go and beat on the stairs before.
She knocked as well. There was definitely empty space behind. It was entirely possible that there would be nothing at all behind this structure, just dust and air. But her heart was thumping and her brain felt clear. While she had a flashlight on her phone, she needed something more. It was time to employ the tactical flashlights that the school issued to every student in case of power outage. She went to her room and got hers. These were no simple cylindrical flashlights that gave you a gentle beam. These were monsters with handles that blinded and confused the enemy and summoned passing planes. Stevie took hers into the hall and switched it on. Suddenly, the end of the hall was flooded in a white light that exposed detail. Hold it, she said, shoving it into David's hands. Bathed in clinical illumination, the staircase began to offer up its secrets. While the surface appeared smooth, she could just make out the finest trace of a doorway. It had been expertly fitted to be virtually invisible. The 1930s had not anticipated this kind of luminosity. Hello, she said.
Holy shit,
David added. There was no visible way of opening the door, and the opening was no wider than the edge of a piece of paper, possibly even more narrow. There had to be a catch somewhere. Something that would pop it. Stevie felt all along the floor, the walls, nothing.
In movies, you pull down a candlestick on the wall,
David said as he set the flashlight on the floor. He took off his $2,000 coat and bunched it up to make a wedge to prop the light toward the wall.
This isn't a movie. We don't have a candlestick.
David came over to help her feel the wall. He examined the steps, running his fingers under the lip of each one.
Why are you fondling the wall?
They had not heard Nate return and slink up to them in his wizard robes.
Do you really want to know? Stevie said.
Oh, God.
Then I'd turn around, she said. You won't like it.
I don't like anything. What are you doing?
Looking for a tunnel, she said.
Nate looked at Stevie with an expression that said, make this stop happening.
It won't be like last time, Stevie said. This is just for research.
So was the last time, you guys. Wait, David said. Back up, back up.
He motioned Stevie to clear, then took a step back and threw himself against the wood, hard. Nothing. He backed up a step and rubbed his arm.
Good one,
Nate said.
Keep doing that. I thought I felt something,
David said. Let me... He threw himself up against the wood again, letting out a little groan as he made impact.
Yeah, Stevie said. Maybe...
One more time. And this time, there was a pop. Just a small pop. The panel had shifted just the tiniest bit, and now there was an opening about a quarter of an inch wide.
Cool,
Nate said.
Just slip on through there.
Screwdriver, Stevie said.
She did not have one, but Janelle certainly would, and Janelle usually left her door unlocked. It was wrong, of course, to go in, but this was an emergency. Janelle's room was an expression of its inhabitant, perfectly organized, every bit of space cared for and optimized. The air smelled of perfume and honeysuckle from a scented oil diffuser. Her workstation was by the window. She had repurposed her desk and put all her tools there. After a moment of looking through clippers and more confusing devices, Stevie found a small hammer. That would do. She returned to the back of the stairs and wedged the hammer in, first by the small claw end. The passage gave another inch or two, and she put in the end of the hammer handle and used it as a lever. The door did not want to open. Years of non-use, or possibly a catch she could not see, made it resistant. It groaned in revolt.
You're going to break the stairs,
Nate said.
Want me to try?
David asked.
No.
Stevie shook out her hands from the pressure of holding the hammer. She went in one more time, putting all her weight on the handle of the hammer. Then the back of the stairs swung open, revealing a small, dark space.
This is a good Halloween,
David said. Stevie was able to nudge the doorway open a bit more, shine the light in, and reach around. At first, she thought she was touching tar, but then she realized that it was about 8 years of dust and dirt that had gone sticky and formed into a new and exciting substance. There was no difficulty finding the hatch. It was right there, in the floor, bolted closed. She tested the bolt, expecting to find that it was stuck in place, but it moved and slid open. She took the handle and pulled, revealing an opening about 2 feet around.
This guy really liked crawl spaces,
David said, leaning over her shoulder into the space.
What is that?
It's a hole, Stevie said, trying to block the view.
It's got a ladder in it. Is that a tunnel?
Here we go,
Nate said. Stevie pushed back and sat on her heels, taking in the view in front of her.
How does this keep happening to you?
David said. Because I look, Stevie replied. A lot of things happen when you go out and do them on purpose.
Okay, Stevie.
Nate was squatting by her side.
I know this is a thing for you, but for real, pics will be back and they're kind of... Things are kind of sensitive around here and you just got back. See what I'm saying?
Look at this, Stevie said.
Yeah, I know, but remember how these things can be unstable? That is a hole. A small hole. Anything could be down there. There could be wires or something. There could be water.
David hung down into the opening with the flashlight.
I don't see any water,
he said.
Or wires.
Seriously,
Nate said. Stevie knew he had a point. Also, she had made one other promise. To Larry. No tunneling. Still.
Nate's right, she said.
She sprang up from her crouch and went looking for her phone.
We can't just go in there. Here's what we do, Stevie said. We call Janelle.
For sure she has a little drone with a camera or something, and we fly it down there and...
Time for hole diving,
David said, turning himself around so that he was feet first. He started lowering himself down.
David, she said, seriously, we don't...
But we will,
he said.
If I don't come back in 10 minutes, avenge me. Or are you coming? You know you want to.
Then he started climbing down. Nate shook his head and started to disappear into his robes.
It's cool down here,
David yelled up.
You should come in. There's...
He emitted a scream, which caused both Nate and Stevie to leap. Stevie almost threw herself on top of the hole. David peered up and smiled.
Kidding, it's fine,
he said, looking up at her.
You guys are so jumpy.
What if it collapses?
Nate said.
Like, suddenly? Just when we're in it for no reason?
We could wait for Janelle.
Come on,
David said.
You don't get chances like this all the time. Come on, come on, come on, come on, come on. You can't resist.
Was it the smile? Was it the coat and the suit? The glint in his eye? Or was it just the pure tunnelness of it all? Because he was right. She could not resist.
He can't go alone, she said to Nate.
He can. We could shut the hatch.
Just watch for us, she said. I promise, promise, promise we'll be careful, but I can't let him go by himself.
Nate yanked his beard down to his chest.
Why do people do stupid things?
Because we're stupid, she said.
She tested the top rung with her foot. Nate grabbed her arm, not hard, but enough to get her attention.
Hayes didn't die from the tunnel coming down,
he said.
He died from a gas. You have no idea what's down there.
This gave Stevie a moment's pause. He was right.
But that gas wasn't in the tunnel before, Stevie said. Someone put that dry ice there. The tunnel was fine before. I went in it. Look, we're just going to go a little bit.
You make it really hard for me,
he said. I know, she said. But dragons...
Don't.
Okay, she said. I'm sorry. But will you watch anyway? Nate rubbed a tired hand across his forehead.
Do I have any choice?
Technically, yes.
Yeah, but you'd go even if I didn't. He's down there.
Stevie wondered what that meant, but there was no time to wonder much. There was a tunnel to explore. 14. Stevie had entered a tunnel at Ellingham Academy before, the famous tunnel. That tunnel was wide as a highway in comparison with this one. This was a crack in the earth, too tight, too low, and much, much too dark. Stevie turned her flashlight straight down, forming a pool that splashed up the walls around her. Unlike the tunnel to the sunken garden, which was made of even brickwork, this was made of rough rock, possibly pieces left over from the mountain demolition. They might not cut you open, Stevie thought, as she tentatively felt along the wall in front of her. But they would rub you raw if you made contact with your bare skin. She couldn't extend her elbows more than a few inches in either direction, so she hesitantly reached overhead into the dark. The ceiling was only a little more than a hand's length above her head. And with each step, the walls grew a little closer. It was, in a word, unwelcoming. In two words, a mistake. Some part of Stevie possessed enough basic self-preservation to know that structural integrity and air quality were important parts of staying alive, and not being in tunnels was an important part of Larry not busting her ass right off the mountain. But some louder, wilder, definitely stupider part of her kept her moving forward. And it wasn't just because David had gone down first, no matter what Nate said. Stevie tucked her hands up into the arms of Poirot's jacket to keep from being cut, and numbly felt her way along, taking half-sized steps, and right into David's back.
That's you, right? He said. I'm afraid of monsters. Also, it stinks down here.
This was true. There was a low-lying funk in the air. The drone would work better, she said. You know, if that's a leaking gas line or something.
Did you just say leaking gas line?
Nate said from above.
Smells more like ass than gas, David replied. Tight, dark, smelly. This tunnel has it all. 5 out of 5 stars. It's really okay to leave him to die, Nate said.
Then, perhaps remembering that someone actually had died the last time they went into the tunnel, he went silent. The space felt like it was getting smaller. And she wondered if they might get to some point where they actually got stuck, like people who dove into caves and their hoses caught on rock and they never got out. Except this wasn't underwater. This was almost worse.
Now this is a Halloween, David said.
Stevie could only see a bit of the back of his shirt. She kept one hand in the middle of his back as a way of maintaining pace. Now that they had proven there was a tunnel under Minerva, it was unclear to Stevie how far they had to go in this exercise. But if she knew anything about David, it was that he was going to find the other end of this passage. And if the other end was at the Great House, that was a good distance away. So they went farther into the dark, step by step.
So,
David said, his voice low.
I've been thinking. Maybe we just need to clean the slate.
Stevie hesitated for a moment, losing contact with the back of his shirt.
What do you mean? She said.
Maybe I should give you everything so there's nothing left for you to snoop for. Do you want to know about me? About my dad? Do you want to know the whole deal?
Now? Now he was doing this? In some death crack under the ground? But it made sense in a way. It was dark. They couldn't see each other. No one could hear them. Not even Nate, who was too far away at this point. This was as private as you could get, and they were invisible to each other.
Okay, she said.
I don't tell people my dad is Edward King because he's Edward King, but I also don't tell people because it's pathetic. It's like every other dumb divorce story. But here goes.
Stevie wasn't sure if the sudden airlessness in the tunnel was her imagination. Probably.
My mom was a concierge at a swanky resort in Marin, David began. She did things like set up the wine-tasting weekends and the spa experiences and golf trips. Edward King went to some event there, some fundraising thing, and he and Becky locked eyes. This was before he was a big deal. He wasn't a senator yet, just some local politician on the rise. My mom is very pretty, and Edward King is rich. It's not that Becky is just after money. It's more that she doesn't get that money doesn't make you smart. She thinks people who have it are maybe not better, but more complete or something. I don't think she's worked out that you can be rich and have done nothing to deserve it, which is weird because she dealt with rich people for a living and should have known that's not true. She's not stupid, but she has some issues. You don't get together with Edward King if you feel great about yourself. It's not a solid emotional choice. He paused, and Stevie wondered what was happening. She could not see his face or really even his back, but she could tell that the caustic tone in his voice was forced. He was talking into the dark because it was easier, because he could not be seen while he revealed himself. Even though nothing physical was happening, this was the most intimate they had ever been. No, she said into the beating pause.
No, he agreed. It's really not. They got married pretty quickly in some shady private ceremony in a judge's office, and I came out 7 months later. Eddie put Becky and me in his house in Harrisburg and went off to D.C. to continue his career. And that was the end of the romance. I was the result of the most consequential bang Eddie ever had. Captain Personal Responsibility paid the bills. I never really remember him being around much. Maybe at Christmas. He pulled us out to use us as props at a few things, but then that stopped. Becky was bitter and had nothing to do, so she started drinking. One time when I was maybe 9, I heard water running. I was playing on my Xbox, but I always listened. When you live with an alcoholic, you have to listen a lot. The water was running way too long. I went upstairs and the carpet in the hallway was all wet, and there was water coming out from under the bathroom door. Becky went in there with a bottle of Chablis and passed out. She was red all over. The water was turned all the way up on the hot side. I had to pull her out, then shower her in cool water because of the burns. She didn't wake up. So I called Eddie. I got his assistant, who told me to call 911, so the ambulance came. She was okay in the end, just drunk, minor burns. Eddie called me later that night and basically told me off for calling him and letting his assistant know about what was going on with my mom. I should have handled it. That was the night I decided that Edward King could fuck off forever. That was one of the things I liked about you right away. You also know that Edward King should fuck off forever. It's a good quality to have. She noticed that he had slowed his pace. She kept her hand on his back and pressed in a bit, assuring him of her presence. When I was 10, Becky got pregnant with a magic baby. It wasn't Eddie's. I mean, I don't want to brag, but I can count to 9. And Eddie was not around 9 months before my sister Allison was born. Her dad is probably this guy in the state legislature who went to Becky's gym. He came around the house a few times. I never remembered his name, so I just called him Chad. To his face. Right after Allison was born, Chad left the state legislature, and then the state. One does not simply sleep with Edward King's wife. Then Eddie and Becky got a nice, quiet divorce. How did people not know about this? Stevie said. That he was married before.
That's the magic of Edward King, David said.
He made sure we were gone before anything big started happening with his campaign. He married Tina, former intern Tina, to use her full title. Tina is a good campaign wife. She has great teeth, great big white teeth. It looks like she has a mouthful of kitchen cabinets. How am I doing so far with the full disclosure thing?
It's a lot.
Good thing we're at the end, he said, stopping. Literally, the end of the tunnel.
Let me see, she said.
How? I can't move around you.
Bend down.
David squashed himself down and Stevie shone her light at the wall. There was a short metal ladder, just 8 rungs, leading up to a round hatch.
Keep the light on it, he said, standing again.
He set his light down, shook the ladder once,
then climbed and reached up his hand, testing the hatch, pushing hard.
"Nope," he said. "That's not opening. A long, dark journey into nothing. But good tunnel."
He climbed back down. Stevie lowered her light so he would not be blinded. For a moment, they were face to face in the dark, though they could not really see each other. She turned her flashlight down to the ground.
"Why did you decide to tell me all this?"
she said.
"Like I said, clear the slate."
"But why?"
"Because my dad has messed up everything in my life. Now he's making a career of messing up everyone's lives, but he can't have this. He can't have you. It sounds cheesy, but it's all I've got."
"But your dad does have me," she thought. Could she say it? Tell him right now? He was reaching for her in the dark, his hand searching, landing on her shoulder, finding its way to her neck to feel along her chin. "Tell him now. Tell him right now. He just told you everything." He ran his fingers down her jawline gently. Her breath snagged, and she leaned her hip up against the wall for support, which was easy because the wall was only an inch away. He kept coming closer, slowly, testing his way, until his chest was against hers and she did not move. The heavy flashlight was weighing down her left hand. She found herself leaning down to put it on the ground. Then she rose and reached for his head with both hands, intertwining them in his curly hair. When her lips met his, she felt something release inside of her, something she didn't know she had been holding. There was something frantic about the way she kissed him, like being with him was the only way she could breathe. They couldn't move to the left or right, so they stayed locked together. She kissed down his neck and he let out a soft moan, then a little happy laugh.
"This went better than I hoped," he said. "I thought..."
"Shut up," she said, kissing him again. He reached around, gripping her and lifting her a few inches off the ground. Had there been room, she would have put her legs around him. But the tunnel walls did not stretch to accommodate her desires.
"There's something,"
he mumbled against her lips.
"What?"
she mumbled back.
"Light. Nate has to be signaling."
He set her down gently. She wished she could see his expression now, but they were blind to each other. He held her face in his hands for a long moment, saying nothing. Not kissing, not moving, not seeing.
"Nate,"
he said again after a long pause.
"Nate," she replied.
"Your turn to lead."
She fumbled around, her hands shaking and her legs wobbly, trying to find the flashlight. Then she turned awkwardly. She was very glad that David had taken the lead on the way in because she had only seen his back. Had she had a good look at the long, tight way forward, she would never have gone on, and what had just happened would never have happened. They walked back, David at her heels, his hand playing with the tips of her hair, teasingly poking at her ribs, tickling the back of her neck. The world was perfect and hilarious all of a sudden, even if they were busted down here. It would all be all right. Her life had been building to this tunnel, this moment. She was warm and giddy. She was a new Stevie. Her light caught something on the ground. At first glance, it was simply more black in a world of blackness, but this was a different, deeper black against the gray, and it had a bit of shine. She bent down and reached for the thing, and David took the opportunity to reach around her waist and hug her.
"What is it?"
David said.
"Treasure?"
She held it under the flashlight beam. It was plastic. A bit of bag, shiny and black.
"Just a piece of bag," she said.
There were no plastic bags in the 30s, probably.
Probably?
Stevie rubbed the fragment between her fingers. There was something. Something that clicked in the back of her mind. Her brain was always doing that. Clicking and not talking to her about the clicking.
"You okay?"
he asked.
"Yeah,"
Stevie said absently. The bit of plastic slid coolly between her fingertips.
"It's nothing."
The internal clicking got louder. There was a Geiger counter in her brain. Then she saw it. It had been hard to see the way they came in because it was on an angle. Another opening, about 2.5 feet wide. "There's another tunnel," she said. She shone her light down into the space.
"I'm ashamed of myself for saying this," David said. "But we should get back up before Pix comes home or Nate seals us in."
Stevie took just a few steps into the new branch of tunnel. On the ground in front of her was another piece of plastic. She picked it up. It was the same shiny black plastic. Garbage bag plastic, that's what it was. Click, click, click. Her mind was going faster now, showing her picture after picture. Garbage bags in the kitchen at home. Her clothes in garbage bags when she came back to Ellingham. Garbage clothes. Ellie wearing a skirt made of garbage bags at the silent party. Up ahead, there was some trash on the ground. That's what it looked like, anyway, from a distance. There was a subtle sheen from more garbage bag plastic, then something formless. Purple. She didn't have to go any farther to know what she had found. Interview with Marion Nelson, conducted in New York City by Agent Henry Evans, NYC office, and Agent George Marsh, Vermont field office. April 20th, 1936. H.E. Thank you for coming in to speak to us, Miss Nelson. M.N.
It's no trouble at all, none at all.
H.E. You understand what has transpired? I don't need to explain anything to you.
M.N.
Yes, I know.
I know about it.
H.E.
You are the house mistress of Minerva House at Ellingham Academy, is that correct?
M.N.
Correct.
H.E.
How did you get your position?
M.N.
I knew Mr. Ellingham from here, from New York. I worked as a secretary at his newspaper.
H.E.
Directly for him?
M.N.
No, for the editor-in-chief, Max Campbell. But I got to know Mr. Ellingham from his visits to the office. He was very involved in the day-to-day.
H.E.
You became friends?
M.N.
Yes.
H.E.
Good friends?
M.N.
I...
Yes, good friends. Agent Marsh.
We first met when you worked at the paper.
M.N.
Yes, when you saved Mr. Ellingham from that bomb.
H.E.
And he asked you to come and be a house mistress at his new school.
M.N.
Yes, he wanted people at the school he knew and trusted.
G.M.
You're the only person from the newspaper to come and work at the academy, Miss Nelson. Just you.
M.N.
Yes.
G.M.
Why do you think you were the only one he brought from the newspaper?
M.N.
I suppose. I was the only one with the right skills. I'm not a reporter. I was a secretary.
H.E.
Did you have any other position at the school? Did you teach?
M.N.
Biology.
H.E.
So you taught biology and lived at Minerva House?
M.N.
Yes.
H.E.
Miss Nelson, we've been going through the files on all the faculty at Ellingham Academy. None of the other faculty members had a direct connection to Albert Ellingham's business life. Not just the newspaper. All the businesses.
M.N.
Yes, what of it?
H.E.
I understand that was not a question, just an observation. It's just that out of the hundreds and hundreds of people who work for Albert Ellingham, he chose you to come to the academy.
M.N.
And you, Mr. Marsh?
G.M.
I don't work for Mr. Ellingham, Miss Nelson. I work for the Federal Bureau of Investigation. I was posted locally to Mr. Ellingham. But he picked you out of everyone who works for him.
M.N.
Like I said, Albert, Mr. Ellingham wanted people he knew.
H.E.
You must be close. You call him Albert?
M.N.
I don't know what you're implying.
H.E.
Nothing at all. I am making an observation, but I now need to ask Miss Nelson, and I must remind you of the serious nature of the matter at hand. Is your relationship with Albert Ellingham more than friendly?
Subject had no reply.
H.E. Miss Nelson, I'm not asking this to embarrass you. I'm asking because we need to understand everything that happened at the academy that night. We need information.
M.N.
I know you need information.
H.E.
So will you please answer my question?
Subject had no reply. H.E.
Miss Nelson, when you left Ellingham Academy, you took a train back to New York with several students. Then you went to an apartment at 1040 Fifth Avenue.
M.N.
Who told you that?
H.E.
It's not important how we know. It's important that we find out the facts. Is that correct?
M.N.
Yes.
H.E.
Who owns that apartment?
M.N.
The Ellingham Corporation. I don't have an apartment of my own right now. I live at the school. Mr. Ellingham let me stay in one of his properties.
H.E.
And when did he tell you you could stay at one of his properties? When did he convey this to you?
M.N.
When? When he told us we had to go.
H.E.
Miss Nelson, do you understand that lying to a federal agent is a serious matter? I need to point out again that we need information if we are to find Iris and Alice Ellingham. Without information, there is nothing we can do. Any delay in getting that information means we are delayed in our search, and if we have false information, we go down false roads. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Subject is visibly distressed.
M.N. Oh, God. Oh, how did this happen? Can we stop for a moment, please? Just a moment, please.
H.E.
Miss Nelson, I'm going to need you to be honest now. There is nothing to fear in being honest. We are not out to shame you or Mr. Ellingham. We just need to know. This is information that could be used against Mr. Ellingham or you. We need to have it. Is your relationship with Albert Ellingham purely friendly?
M.N.
You know! You know! Why do you keep asking? Why do you keep asking what you know?
Subject needed some time to regain composure. H.E.
How long has it been going on?
M.N.
7 years.
H.E.
Does anyone else know? Does Mrs. Ellingham know?
M.N.
She doesn't know. She's
distracted.
H.E. What does that mean?
M.N.
She's... I don't want to speak ill of her. I know how that looks, especially now. But you have to understand, she's not like him. She's not serious-minded.
We understand each other. He can talk to me. H.E.
On the night of the kidnapping, Mr. Ellingham could not be found for a period of approximately 45 minutes, around 2 in the morning. He was in his office, and then he wasn't. Do you know anything about that missing time?
Subject had no reply.
GM. Take your time, Miss Nelson. We're not looking to embarrass anyone. We just want to know what happened.
M.N.
We met.
G.M.
Where?
M.N.
We have a meeting place where they're building the gymnasium.
G.M.
Do you have any sense of how Mr. Ellingham got to you without being seen leaving his office or the house?
M.N.
We have a way.
A photographic copy of the truly devious letter was presented.
H.E. Have you ever seen this letter?
M.N.
No.
H.E.
Did Albert Ellingham ever mention it to you?
M.N.
No.
H.E.
When you worked at the newspaper, did you get letters like this?
M.N.
We got threatening letters, of course. Someone put a bomb in Albert's car there. We got letters, all sorts.
H.E.
Look at it carefully. Did you ever get anything like this at the newspaper?
M.N.
Nothing exactly like it.
Never cut out letters.
H.E. Is there anything else that we should know about? Anything at all? Anything related to Iris or Alice?
M.N.
Little Alice. Oh, Albert lives for her. You don't understand. He lives for that little girl.
You'd think she was...
H.E.
Was what?
Subject had no reply. H.E.
Was what, Miss Nelson?
M.N.
You'd think she was the only person in the world. That's all. The only person in the world.
15.
David,
Stevie said quietly. Between her heavy heartbeat and the smell, she felt like she might vomit at any moment, but she had to hold it down, had to get some control over this.
Back up.
What's going on?
It's blocked, she said. Just back up.
No matter how calm she tried to keep her voice, there was a note in it that gave away the fact that something very bad was happening. He stepped around her to look to see what was in the passage.
What the hell is...
She heard him figure it out.
Back up, she said gently. Back up, back up. This is how we help her. Stevie!
There was a lightness in his voice. It was almost giddy.
Turn around,
Stevie said, moving him back, foot by foot.
I need you to turn around.
Now she was echoing Larry's words to her.
Turn around. Don't look, because if you look, it stays with you forever.
We can't leave her, he said. We're getting help. Turn. Come on.
She had to maneuver him back into the main artery of the tunnel. Her adrenaline had taken over. Somehow she knew how to do this, how to grab David's hand and lead him back to the end. When they reached the ladder, Nate was hanging over the opening, his wizard hood drooping around his neck.
Up, Stevie said. Move, move.
Nate backed up and she and David scrambled out. When David got up, he staggered into the hallway and bent over, half gagging.
What's going on? Nate said. What's down there?
Stevie shook her head, partially because she could not find the words, and partially to hold down the feeling of sickness.
What is happening?
Nate said again.
Ellie, Stevie replied. Ellie is down there.
Ellie is down there? Hiding? I have to call for help.
Stevie shook her head and Nate got the message and fell back against the wall. Stevie pulled her phone from her pocket. David lurched along the wall and reached for it, pushing it down.
Don't. No, I have to call,
David said, pulling out his phone.
Both of you should go in your rooms, put some headphones on. That's where you've been. Play something loud. Go.
What?
Stevie said.
You can't have been down there, Stevie. You get it? Nate, you get it? She wasn't there. I went down there alone, just me.
What?
We're lying now?
Nate said, to cops.
You know what it means if Stevie was down there. I'll be okay, she won't be. All we're doing is reporting. That's all.
There was an urgency in David that was entirely unfamiliar. A high flush to his cheeks and a rasp in his voice. Nate turned gray as the wizard robe he was still wearing.
Just go in your rooms and shut the door,
David said again, his voice pleading.
That's all you have to do.
Nate swore under his breath but pulled himself away from the wall.
Are you going?
He asked Stevie. Stevie was not sure where she was. Moments ago, she had been in the tightness of the tunnel, in David's arms, embraced by the earth, alone in the universe. Then there was Ellie. Nate shook Stevie's arm.
I'm not going if you're not, he said. Tell me what you're doing. I don't understand anything right now.
David looked at her. His hair was still tousled from where her hands had been. She had kissed the fine smoothness of his neck. The smell of the tunnel poisoned her memory. David would be safe. Nate didn't know why, of course.
Yeah, she said. Go to your room.
This felt entirely wrong, what she was doing for herself, but entirely right for Nate. Nate didn't need this. Nate had been struggling enough with what happened to Hayes.
Jesus Christ,
Nate said as he went past them, tripping on the hem of the robe as he went up the curve of the stairs. Stevie gulped down some air. She started moving on autopilot, stumbling toward her room.
She heard the first arrivals about 5 minutes later. She had put in earbuds but turned nothing on. Her heartbeat echoed back at her in her ears. There was another arrival. More voices in the common room, in the hall. She turned on some music, loud. She closed her eyes and put her head back against the wooden bed frame. When the knock came on Stevie's door, she actually didn't hear it at first. She had put the volume up too high. Pix eventually cracked the door.
"Stevie?"
she said. Stevie peeled her eyes open. The effort was tremendous, the light from the ceiling offensively bright.
"Stevie," Pix said again, "can you stay in here for a few minutes? There's something going on, nothing to worry about. Security just has to look at something in the hallway."
"Sure," Stevie said. Her voice sounded sleepy.
"Sorry to disturb you. Go back to sleep."
Stevie closed her eyes again and let movies play out on the backs of her eyelids. She summoned the feeling again of David's kiss and touch. There was so little time to savor it. The memory would fade. The sensation would be corrupted by whatever was coming. This had all happened before. The same, but different. Pix returned and told her to pack some things in a bag.
"Take your time," she said,
but her face betrayed her shock.
"There's an issue in the house and we're sleeping somewhere else tonight."
Stevie got out of bed and began mechanically filling her backpack. Medicine, clothes, her computer and phone, everything shoved into the backpack until it squeaked a bit from the strain. She was about to close it when she had another thought. The tin. It would not fit. She pulled out a shirt that was taking up valuable space and put the tin in its place. Better safe than sorry. There was a security officer blocking the view to the end of the hall. Nate was sitting at the table in the common room, and Janelle, still dressed as Wonder Woman, was grabbing at things in her room and packing her own bag. Pix stood at the table, her expression grim.
"Where's David?"
Stevie asked Pix.
"He's over at the Great House. He found Ellie, Stevie. In a tunnel. She wasn't okay. She died."
Pix waited for Stevie to absorb this.
"Where are we going to go?"
Nate asked.
"We're setting up for the night in the yurt. They're going to bring in beds and we'll hang dividers from the ceiling. It'll be nice and cozy. We can talk."
"Oh, good,"
Nate said, picking at the table surface with his fingernail.
"As soon as Janelle is ready, we can go. I'm going to get my things."
"She must be tired of having her students die,"
Nate said when Pix went upstairs.
"Think of the paperwork."
When Stevie did not reply, Nate nudged her hand.
"Are you okay?"
he asked.
"I have no idea."
"How the hell is this happening? Didn't we just do this? I thought she ran away, like she went off with circus people or something. Not that she was under us."
"She wasn't really under us," Stevie said. "She was kind of far away."
"Oh, good.
You know what I mean," she said.
"I know what you mean. I know that this place may suck. Two people are dead. It's not the school's fault." "No, but maybe this place..."
"Are you saying this place is like cursed or something?"
Nate shook his head.
"I'm saying two people have died, and that's a lot more than the number who died at my last school. I know shit happens. Terrible shit happens, but this is weird, terrible shit with tunnels and dry ice and people suffocating to death underground."
Stevie pulled her shoulders closer into her body. Her mind drifted away. It went to David and his story of his mom and his sister, of the promises she had made, of the coldness of the case she wanted to solve, and the coldness under the ground. Janelle emerged in a pair of fleece pajama bottoms and a massive fuzzy sweater, a silver overnight bag on her shoulder. She walked over to Nate and Stevie and dropped an arm around each. There were tears at the edges of her eyes.
"Pix said Vi could come over to the yurt too, if that's all right with you. I'd just really like to see them."
"Sure," Stevie said. "Of course." Nate nodded absently.
"David found her.
They took him over to the Great House.
The blue door creaked open, and Larry came inside in his red and black fleece coat, his walkie-talkie buzzing on his hip. He surveyed the group at the table.
"We're going to take you over to the yurt now. We haven't told the school at large yet. Some people are still at the party. I'd ask you, if you don't mind, not to spread this. I know Vi Harper Tomo has permission to come over, but please don't text this to anyone."
"We won't,"
Janelle said. Larry's focus landed on Stevie. He was reading her. She tried to shut herself, as loud and cleanly as shutting a book. But people aren't books, unfortunately. The group made its way into the night, the two officers flanking them. The night was cold and still as glass, with only a sliver of a moon. Vi met them halfway, with the head of Juno House as an escort.
"What's going on?"
they said.
"Are you okay?"
They looked at Janelle closely, then thumbed away the tears under her eyes.
"We'll talk over there," Janelle said. "I'm okay, we just have to go."
Nate put on his headphones and lowered his head. He was checking out of the situation. Stevie wasn't sure which one of them led this movement, but it seemed that she and Larry were at a different pace than the others, and a fractionally different trajectory, until they were on their own little path together. Either he wanted to talk to her, or she subconsciously had to talk to him. Whatever the case, it was something she could not bear to hold in. As they passed the conference of statue heads, Stevie came to a stop. Larry nodded to the others to keep going. He leaned against one of the plinths and examined her.
"You need to talk,"
he said.
"I was down there," she replied.
"I know."
He held up a fake mustache. It must have come off when she was making out with David. She had forgotten she had been wearing it.
"What you need to do right now is tell me the truth."
Stevie dug into her pocket and pulled out the fragment of trash bag. She handed it to Larry.
"I found this on the floor down there."
"What were you doing, Stevie?"
he said.
"I told you, no tunnels."
"Fenton, Dr. Fenton thought there was a tunnel. I looked. I found it. It was homework, sort of. I didn't know Ellie was there. I had no idea she was there. It was just a tunnel. I didn't want to go in, but he went inside."
"David."
Stevie nodded.
"I had to follow him. I thought he might... I don't know."
"Did you find anything besides this, aside from..."
Larry held up the fragment of garbage bag. Stevie shook her head.
"There was... a smell."
"The first time you experience that, you never forget it. You can get used to it, to dealing with it, but it's hard."
"Did she just get stuck down there?"
Stevie asked.
"When she left the Great House that night?"
"That would be my guess,"
Larry said.
"We tracked up to the other end of the passage. We had no idea it was there. Goes to a hatch in the Great House basement floor that blends in with the other stones. She went in. Something blocked her way out."
Stevie's mind immediately went to the Edgar Allan Poe story, The Cask of Amontillado, about a murderer who lures his victim down to a vault, who is then shackled to the wall and bricked in. The horror of it was too much. Stevie inhaled the cool, clean air greedily. The smell was still there, molecules of it, clinging to the inside of her nose, her skin, her mind.
"What do I do?" Stevie said. "Do you have to tell the police I was there?"
Larry put his hand on his leg and tapped one finger. Then he inhaled deeply and let out a long sigh.
"Nate?"
he asked.
"Nate didn't go down," Stevie said.
"He's not as stupid as the two of you."
"He told us not to go. He stayed at the top in case something happened."
"Definitely not as stupid,"
Larry said.
"All right. This is about finding and reporting an accident victim. Technically, it sounds like David was the one who found her. You can't report something you didn't see."
This was wrong, but Stevie made no correction.
"If anything changes, then you step forward. You do it at once. You don't go in any tunnel here ever again, for any reason. You follow every rule down to the letter.
Thank you, she said quietly.
Don't thank me.